I've now moved from the Northeast. I'm down the South, down in Florida, near the tip of Florida in Miami, talking to Patrick. Patrick, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Patrick Walsh. I work at South Florida Jobs with Justice, but besides that, I'm also a member of the Black Mangrove Collective. It's a new group consisting of five people. What we're trying to do is set up a social center, radical bookstore, and coffee house in Miami to give Miami kind of a place for radical politics to be discussed and for other organizations to emerge from that space.
Right, so let's talk about Miami in general first. I was telling you earlier that when I told people I was coming down here, they were going, "You go to Miami? What the hell are you going to Miami for?" Because the popular political picture of it elsewhere, I think, is, it's dominated by right-wing Cuban exiles who kind of wanted out any left-wing activity and, the kind of major police repression of the during the free trade, the Americans summer protests down here, that's what people know about it. But and of course Miami Vice and all that sort of stuff. So tell us about a bit about the other side of the city. What's happening down here?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot happening down here. It seems that a lot of the issues that are issues in other cities are happening here, and in some cases they're amplified just because there is a lack of any kind of established resistance, any kind of established culture of activism, never mind radical activism or anarchist activism. There's hardly a really solid left beyond the Democratic Party, if you can call that left. But the reality is that a lot of the issues that are important here, especially housing, labor, immigration, I mean, it's all happening in Miami. We're just starting to see a small rise in what I think will eventually become a very significant movement, just because, it might be because of the times, but in the last few years, there's been a significant rise in different groups emerging, and what we're trying to do is provide a space for, to have a radical influence and a radical critique of social movements.
In terms of, like, one of the things that's come up in a lot of cities is the way racism affects organizations and stuff, and Miami's kind of interesting because it's, in some level, it's more multi-ethnic or whatever kinds of things, and then another level, it's like I've just spent the evening day driving around Miami, and there were huge disparities between, the kind of tourist area down at the beach and the areas in the back where, a good part of the city's population lives. How do those things work out?
I mean, Miami is a very segregated city, and it's not necessarily black and white. Miami is, influence of Latin American populations is extremely significant and makes it very unique compared to other cities. I mean, there are other cities that have significant populations, but I mean, Miami is just unique because you do have the influence of the exile community, you have the Haitian community as well as a strong. It's not just Cubans. It's people come from all over Latin America, increasingly Venezuela, but also Colombia, Central American countries, and the Caribbean. And right now, I think roughly the demographics are 50%, over 50% Latin America. At least I know that 50% speak Spanish, and about 25% like Anglo white, and another 25% is African American. And the African American community is really the only constituency that has real roots that go back generations in Miami, and they're also the most marginalized group, with maybe the exception of the Haitians. But it's very complex, the demographic map of Miami. So it makes it really hard to work with, because there are language barriers, there are cultural barriers that need to be overcome. Fortunately, the movements that are here in Miami are all working together, and because they're so small, they're forced to work together, and it's very good because it's small but very tight, and we're working on those divides together with a fairly common vision.
one interesting thing is this whole image of Miami has been dominated by, you know, right-wing exiles from Cuba and from other countries. And there's obviously quite a bit of reality to that. But the other observation I've had is that, like, you know, a lot of the kids of these people kind of have quite a different sort of outlook, and kind of, there's a bit of a change happening around that, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, my personal perspective, I mean, it might be a little bit optimistic and have a lot of kind of speculation involved, but from what I've noticed, that specifically regarding anarchism, or at least libertarian leftism, that there is an opportunity, because there is very real antagonism from Cuban exile community. I mean, there was just an event the other night where the flyer had a you know, an image of El Che on it, and the owner of the venue where the event was happening responded with, "My father was killed by Che." So it caused a little bit of a problem. I think the image was quickly replaced with, like, Muhammad Ali or something. But you know, that is very much a reality, that you can't be openly left wing or really associate with anything, and you can suffer some consequences if you do, or at least if you push it too much, you know. But that said, anarchism offers a good kind of way out for that, because a lot of the second generation, you know, understand their parent, what their parents went through, and the idea of being able to be having to leave their homeland against their will, and suffering a lot of unjust deaths, you know, involved in the Cuban Revolution. So but at the same time, these second generation Cubans are looking around and realizing that only a very few Cubans that are mostly white have become successful and have a lot of the political clout in the region. Most Cuban Americans are extremely poor in Miami, and they do sense that there's something wrong with that the American dream is somewhat of a phantasm. And I've approached a lot of Cuban Americans that are very anti-Castro, but are very interested in anarchism as kind of a best of both worlds, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it, where there is a very adamant skepticism of any kind of authoritarian trend, and that's obviously where the Cuban Revolution went wrong. So I have multiple friends who associate with anarchism, if not self-identify as anarchists, and I think that if framed the right way, a lot of the anarchist ideas can catch on in Miami, and that's what we're trying to do. I mean, it's a very sensitive issue, and it really depends on how you present it. But I think we're doing pretty well. I mean, we've only been around for a few months, and we're already hosting you, and expecting a good crowd. So, and mostly people who have no idea what anarchism is. So you see that there's a lot of potential.
One of the other interesting points you were making is the way Miami is a kind of economic gateway to a lot of kind of Central and South America. Like, you know, in terms of goods flowing into the U.S., there's a lot of stuff that comes through the Port of Miami in particular. It's a pretty central port.
Right. I mean, Port of Miami, as far as cargo boats shipping as well, but specifically the airport is a major route from through which goods from Latin America come and go. As far as strategy goes, Miami does hold a geopolitical, you know, position in the United States economy. For instance, I'm working. My organization, Jobs of Justice, is working on a campaign with Colombian flower workers. 80% of flowers from Colombia go through Miami. And wouldn't it be nice if we could have some kind of organization that organized workers up and down the supply chain, not just the workers in the fields, but also in the warehousing and trucking industry as well, that handle those goods. So Miami is also considered more of in a business sense, it's considered a Latin American city, more than an American city, because you have the cultural ties and the political ties to Latin American companies and governments are very strong, and they provide that kind of cohesion that actually results in a lot of corruption, but effective from their point of view.
So one of the more long-running issues, I guess, that people may have some awareness of elsewhere would be the Coalition of the Mwaki Workers?
The Mwaki, yeah.
The Mwaki Workers, right. And that's basically a campaign to get, I suppose, their field workers down here who pick the tomatoes and stuff that go into fast food all over the U.S., decent wages. You want to explain a bit about that?
Immokalee is about 2.5 hours northwest of Miami. And they're very well known throughout the country. They've launched very successful campaigns against Yum Foods, which is like Pizza Hut and Taco Bell, as well as McDonald's. They're now focusing on Burger King as their next company to campaign against, asking for, among other demands, a penny more per pound for the tomatoes that they pick. And it's an amazing organization because it is the amount of worker involvement and the amount of worker decision making is very high, and the participation of workers is inspiring. So we're very excited in Miami because Burger King national headquarters is in Miami. So it's kind of convenient for them. They don't have to travel to Chicago or elsewhere to march. But we're going to be working with them extensively here in Miami. I mean, all the social movement groups in Miami are working with them. So, there's a lot happening in Miami.
And one of the other major issues people have been talking about is the politics of developments, by which I mean construction in the city, and how that links into gentrification, is the term people normally use, but the sort of problems that are coming out of that. Do you want to give us a couple of examples?
Yeah, I mean, Miami has been considered by some, and of course it's happening everywhere, but during the boom, it was like the poster child for the housing boom. Our skyline has changed drastically over the past few years with condo buildings going up. And in the meantime, a lot of people are suffering and getting marginalized and displaced at a really tragic scale. And we work with a lot of groups, specifically the Miami Workers Center in Liberty City and Power U in Overtown, which are all historically black communities, as well as a group called Take Back the Land, which is a more of a direct action oriented group that facilitates squatting, and they set up a shanty town on an empty lot in Liberty City and maintained it for 6 months, squatting on publicly owned property. It really culminated with a series, an expose by the Miami Herald called House of Lies, which exposed massive corruption in the county and city governments around monies that was supposed to be designated for low-income housing, but was pretty much just given to developers and never accounted for. And this is millions and millions of dollars, I think $86 million. And that brought it to the forefront and really highlighted a problem that has been a problem for long before that, but it brought it to the forefront Miami Workers Center and Power U and Take Back the Land really had a lot of successful campaigns about maintaining public housing, preventing the destruction of housing and the redevelopment of what they call low-income housing, but it ends up not being affordable. And one problem is with the Scott Carter public housing projects, where they were destroying, well, they have destroyed all of them, but the development plan for the new affordable housing was including only half of the original units. So displacement is rampant. My organization is actually organizing trailer parks because they're kind of the last frontier for development, because they can be bought cheap and developed into high-end condos or what have you. The problem is that the residents don't own the land, but they own the mobile homes themselves. Because they're not very movable after they've been there for a while, they're forced to sell, give them up when they're evicted. and the largest amount that they're legally bound to pay the residents for these trailer parks that they put their life savings into is about $1,300, and which isn't enough for, you know, a down payment for anywhere else. And these people are used to paying $400 rent, and there is nothing, nowhere for them to go. So they either have to go homeless or be crammed into a unit with family members. So, and this is, we're talking tens of thousands of people in Miami. Lots happening in Miami.
Tell us a bit more about the Take Back the Land struggle, because that was, it's interesting in terms of what they were trying to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, while other groups have, to with some success, you know, petitioned the government and have campaigned and pressured government to work with them in providing low-income housing and other demands, Take Back the Land took a more a strategy based on direct action. Their observation was that in a time where more and more people needed housing, the government was actively destroying units. And from all that they can gather, there is no will to create public housing. And at that point, you have to say, you know, well, we can't really count on the government to do that. So their approach is taking back the land themselves and organizing communities to gain control of their own communities and their own land. Their campaigns now, like I said, there was a Umoja Village, which is Swahili for unity. They took over a lot of publicly owned land and maintained a shantytown housing collectively homeless individuals. They started gardening it. They created, like a showering system, and it was really amazing. It had a lot of community support as far as providing donated goods and services. And they actually maintained that for 6 months with more than one standoff with the county government and the police, of course. And unfortunately, after 6 months, just after their six-month celebration, it was burnt to the ground, supposedly from a candle that was left burning in one of the shanties. It was, unfortunately, a kindling box. And you know, it was only a matter of time before either a fire or a hurricane came through. But it provided a sense of hope and gave the, you know, proliferated the idea that people can take direct action in the issues that they face. They can fix themselves through organizing their communities. Right now they're starting a new campaign called Take Back the Housing. And what they're doing is seeking out a lot of the units that have been boarded up and left to deteriorate so they can sell for cheap and make a profit. And they're locating these units and moving families into them to squat. And so far that's just beginning. But it's a very inspiring movement. I know a lot of people that are directly involved, and we've been working with them in solidarity for a few months now.
Something else in terms of anarchist stuff going on in the city is last night we visited the Firefly.
The Firefly,
yeah, which is kind of a social center, punk house of sorts. I mean, I hadn't heard the expression punk house until I came to the U.S., so
yeah.
I'm not quite sure what it means.
Yeah, I mean, the folks over at the Firehouse are great folks. The punk scene, anarchist scene in Miami is very minimal, and they kind of have their own strongholds right there. Great folks, really active. And, you know, it's just a space that's badly needed in Miami, because that's one thing that is lacking is space. To build those relationships that are needed for a healthy infrastructure for any kind of movement, the Firefly kind of fills one of, you know, some of that need. It really is. They have events there. They have film screenings. They have parties. They have music, live music, and they run an info shop out of there with a library of all mostly radical literature. You know, the household is run collectively, and we've worked with them a lot. So it's a good crowd.
So my traditional ending question that I always throw at people is, US elections. I mean, things have, well, they've died down a bit because a lot of the primaries have gone through. I actually haven't missed television the last few days. There's probably still stuff going on. What's your take on the whole Clinton versus Obama?
It's like a really bad sitcom that I don't really watch. So, I mean, I'm more interested in developing, you know, helping others empower themselves at a grassroots level than that have far more insight about what their issues are and what problems are than anyone that's running for president of the United States. So, don't have much insight.